This podcast is part of the Midwest Podcast Network. Find out more about our other shows and how to support our network at MidwestPodcastNetwork.com.
Everybody, and welcome to Horror Movie Yearbook. I am one of your hosts, Mr. Tim Long, and I am joined... Why did I say Mr.? And I am joined by my fellow host, Mr.
Willie Gibbs.
Willie, how's it going?
I'm good. I'm doing good. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, absolutely.
You excited? This will be, when this is released, we're recording a day before Thursday night. When this is released, we'll both have seen it.
Yeah. So we're recording this on a Wednesday. So yeah, tomorrow for us... Yesterday for you, we will have seen it.
We will have known. By the time you listen to this, we will know how it is.
It's doing well.
Yeah, it is.
Critically.
It seems to be doing well, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a plus. Certainly better than The Dark Tower did.
Yeah, well.
So.
By the way, you can listen to us talk about The Dark Tower on the Midwest Film Nerds.
Yeah, we do.
The last episode, we did a giant summer wrap-up.
Absolutely.
With our buddies over there. And we talked about, everything.
Yeah.
We covered it all.
Pretty much every movie we've seen this year theatrically.
Yeah, so if you haven't seen... I was thinking about that because we spoil a lot of them, too. So
yeah.
If you haven't seen every movie that came out this summer, stay away from it.
Yeah.
You guys didn't spoil Alien Covenant for me, though.
No. I'm glad you finally got to see it.
Me too.
You were a fan, right?
I liked it.
It totally was kind of angry, right? And mean.
It's very angry and mean. Yeah. Kind of like Ridley.
It is the counselor.
Yeah, it's kind of like Ridley, we get it, man.
Yeah.
We get it.
Yeah.
But I also kind of liked it.
Like, he's rooting for a certain character in that movie that probably shouldn't be rooted for, right?
Yeah. Oh, totally. And he's smarter than everybody. Yeah. I mean,
way better than everybody. Yeah.
He is sweet, though.
Yeah.
I don't blame Ridley.
Are you a bigger fan of... Which Fassbender character are you a bigger fan of? Walter or David?
I should say Walter.
I kind of like them both.
Because he's so good.
He's such a schlub.
He's so good in that movie.
He's such a sweet schlub.
He's so good at both roles. I should like Walter better, but I like David better.
Yeah. Like, if Walter was a song, he'd be Beautiful Loser, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's such a quintessential American everyman.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And then David would be, Killer Queen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be cool.
So that's our Alien Covenant review.
Yeah.
That might be the most we talk about it.
That's probably it.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
We got some house cleaning stuff. The Midwest Game Nerds have recorded a podcast in which they are talking. These are our fellow Midwest Podcast Network cohorts.
Yeah, they're friends.
Yep.
Yeah.
They recorded episode 68 is the most recent one. They're talking about Uncharted, The Lost Legacy.
Yeah, it's a DLC release for Uncharted 3.
You like Uncharted?
I played the portable one. PlayStation PSK? Vita.
Oh, Vita.
Yeah, I liked it. Yeah. I think it's just like the ones on console. It was fun. Yeah, it plays like Tomb Raider, like a Tomb Raider type game. I was more into The Last of Us.
Okay.
Which is the same development company, like game developers, Naughty Dog.
Are they the same?
The creators of Crash Bandicoot, remember him?
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, Last of Us uses a lot of the same, I think it uses the same game engine and stuff as Uncharted, but Last of Us is like a horror, apocalyptic.
Yes.
It's really good. Yeah. Yeah. There's a sequel to that that's coming out too. So
sweet.
I'm sure they'll talk about it on the show.
Yeah.
When it releases.
Yeah. They cover a lot of horror games.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Usually I'm on when they cover horror games or you or both.
Or they've covered horror games. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
They're also talking about Sonic Mania, which is awesome and a lot of fun. And I have played on the Switch. Then we also have Gone to Texas, the Preacher podcast. They are on episode 12 of Preacher. Nick, Alex, and Lance. I always say Nick and Alex because Nick and Alex were starting on that, but Lance is on it all the time now.
Oh, yeah?
So I always forget to mention Lance.
I didn't even
Lance.
Know. Oh, yeah. Awesome. That makes
so
me happy.
So Nick, Alex, and Lance are discussing episode 12 of Preacher called On Your Knees.
Lance is a good dude. You guys
Lance
should
is
listen
a good
to
dude.
That.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun.
Yeah, Lance is very knowledgeable as well, as are Nick and Alex.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. I see Nick and Alex more, so Lance is like a that... delightful treat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Lance can be kind of, he's mysterious is not the word I looking for.
But no, but he's enigmatic.
He is. He had a phase, like he comes in and out. Yeah. And
he's got a very good presence about him. Very good energy. Yeah.
He does have a great energy.
Big fan of Lance.
And Lance saw Yoga Hosers in the theater.
And that's the only other person you know that did that, right?
That is the only person I know that
did
that.
Oh, you didn't go to it?
No. The reason I brought that up is because it just popped into my head.
I forgot that you didn't. You've seen it, though.
I have seen it. It's on Netflix right now.
I still haven't seen it.
You should watch it because you should watch it with your wife.
Yeah.
Because your wife is still a big fan of Kevin Smith, and I have fallen off the wagon.
Yep, me too.
But I'm very interested to listen to both yours and her thoughts on it.
Yeah, I'll watch it at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not my favorite movie. So, On Your Knees is the last episode of Preacher Podcast Gone to Texas. Willie, we don't have any feedback this week, but let the good people know where they can leave us some if they would like.
Yeah. So you can email us horrormovieyearbook@gmail.com. If you got something a little more long form that you want to send us, that's the place to do it. We are on Facebook, facebook.com/horrormovieyearbook. You can, by all means, comment on our posts or leave a post of your own. And then on Twitter, @HMYearbook. And we're pretty active on Twitter mostly, but
yeah.
Feel free to any criticisms or compliments or ideas. Well, you should say we had an iTunes review, and I don't recall the user who submitted it, and I apologize for that. But they're having some audio troubles with the podcast.
Yes.
And we think we've figured it out, and we've hammered down what the issue is, and we think that moving forward it shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah.
So if anybody has any technical issues with the podcast,
let us know because we do appreciate it, because Willie and I both, if we listen to the podcast, listen to it on headphones.
Right. And I think that one of the issues was through speakers, the sound was
the car
tricky.
Yeah, so. Especially car speakers. So give us a heads up, shoot us an email, let us know wherever. But we do appreciate the feedback.
Absolutely.
We're working on it. I might go back and see if I can fix some of those first couple episodes, see if I can just do what I've been going to be doing from now on to them, like George Lucas them.
Yeah, go back and remaster.
But maybe I should just leave them as is, much like the original trilogy.
Well, this would be a lot more akin to like sprucing up some of the digital effect, like digital stuff, as opposed to like
we're not going to add in first. Anakin Skywalker.
No, don't do that.
We're not going to add in Hayden Christensen.
If you edit it in every episode, hidden somewhere like a Hayden Christensen line.
Yeah. If we just edited it in lines from
Try.
Or lines from Takers.
That'd be good. He's so dorky in Takers.
we cannot talk about Takers on this podcast.
We gotta move on.
All right, Willie. I think that's it.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
I think so.
All right. Let's get started, because I like this year. This is a good year.
Yeah, 74 is kind of cool.
Yes. Willie, time machine. Get it. Very nice.
Thank you.
We are in 1974.
Wow.
We're back to the man.
Yeah.
Mr. Nixon.
Yeah.
Tricky Dick.
There he is.
Yes. Following impeachment hearings started on May 9th, Richard Nixon becomes the first U.S. president to be forced to resign after the Watergate scandal on August 9th. I think we've covered Richard in the past.
Yeah, we have.
Okay. Yep. On October 30th, 1974, the much-hyped boxing match between George Foreman and Muhammad Ali for Ali to regain his heavyweight title takes place in Kinshasa, Zaire. The Rumble in the Jungle, I believe.
Yeah. Now, was this after Ali had quit boxing because he became a conscientious objector?
Yes.
It was? Yeah. And then he came back to boxing, okay, cool.
Yep, this is kind of his return.
So George was kind of the interim champion at this point then?
Yes.
Because Ali dropped the belt.
Yep, and this was him coming to get it back.
Gotcha. Okay.
I believe this is, if I'm right, this is Ali. This is the fight that takes place during the Michael Mann movie. Ali.
Yes.
And there's also that excellent documentary When We Were Kings on it that came out in the 90s. So it's a very interesting story. Oh, we're back to Richard Nixon now.
Cool.
President Gerald Ford gives him an unconditional pardon. What a guy.
Nice.
That's that Michigan nice for you.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, look, he's like, Look, Dick, I know you screwed up, and and who hasn't?
Yeah.
You know, let's just let you
I'm the president now.
Yeah, I am the captain now.
I'm the captain now.
And you can go.
Pardon you.
Freely.
The 55 miles per hour speed limit imposed to preserve gas usage US-wide.
Yeah.
Right? Ugh. Doesn't like that.
No one likes 55 mile an hour
especially not limits. Sammy Hagar.
Yeah, right? And me. We have that in common.
And your love of tequila, maybe.
No, not so much. But we do know that that's what dreams are made of. Let's move on.
I was about to say it. Sears Tower in Chicago becomes the world's tallest building. I believe that's called something else now. Is it the Hayes Tower?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the... God, what is it called? I don't remember.
I don't remember either. No. I lived there.
I was just there. I just went to the top of the thing. Willis Tower,
thank you.
Because I remember thinking of Bruce Willis and Nakatomi Plaza, and that's kind of fun. You know, tall tower, yeah, okay. That's moving on, good. Let's move on good. Again. I am not doing well tonight, apparently.
That's okay.
Yeah, I'll improve, maybe.
September 20th, 67 members of the Native American Kootenai tribe, headed by Amy Trice, declared war on the United States government.
Oh, wow.
In a final effort to gain attention from tribes' loss of land and subsequent troubles. I had never heard of this. This was fascinating to me. The war was peaceful and mainly involved charging tolls to pass through tribal lands.
That's how you wage a war right there. I like that. No bloodshed.
Nobody likes tolls.
Dude, that's a ceasefire if you ever saw one.
Yep.
Just throw up some tolls. I actually just got charged by the Illinois Tollway. I missed some.
Oh, that's a,
I goofed
the
up.
Illinois Tollway.
They're confusing.
Pain in the ass.
I mean, they're probably not that confusing, but if you don't live there, they're kind of confusing.
Yeah, and if you don't live there, you might forget to pay it. Yeah.
Yeah, and I was on my way to the Willis Tower, and, you know, they got me.
Was it worth it?
Yeah, it was nice. Good. $86, but it was nice.
Whew.
Yeah, I missed four tolls.
Woo! Yeah. So there's your lesson for the podcast.
Yeah, be really careful.
Do not miss tolls, especially if you're driving through Illinois. Especially if you're in Chicago, because
they will get you.
They will. Mm-hmm. In response to the energy crisis, daylight savings time commences nearly 4 months early in the United States.
All right.
Very nice. Then here's the big one for our purposes. Stephen King publishes his debut novel this year.
Carrie.
It should be Carrie.
Nice.
Which we have talked about.
We have talked about Carrie and King.
Yes.
Absolutely. We have not talked about Carrie King.
No.
I think that's one of the guys from Slayer.
Wait, are you sure we haven't? I think we've probably talked
about Slayer. We might have talked about Slayer. I met Slayer once.
The whole band?
Yeah.
Okay, why?
The whole
Where?
Crew. I was at a... I'm on like tangents tonight.
It's okay.
Slayer's kind of like, you know, they're heavy metal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure there's a cross section.
Yeah, absolutely. I met them all after they played. It was an outdoor festival called Tattoo the Earth.
Okay.
And it was the idea of the festival was that they had renowned tattoo artists present, so you could go get a tattoo while you were at the concert.
Okay.
Yeah. Pretty kind
of, so they're
kind of
like
cool
tattoo
concept.
The whole earth. Okay, I got
yeah, you. Tattoo the earth. Yeah, and there were just a ton of bands. They're, you know, three or four stages, like an Ozfest type situation.
Okay,
but yeah, I met Slayer that night. Yeah,
very nice. Very How cool. were they? Were they cool guys?
They were nice. Yeah, everybody I met backstage. I met Slipknot too.
Cool guys.
Yeah, they were nice. Yeah, 7 out of 9 of them.
I forgot.
I knew you would enjoy being reminded that there are 9 members.
There are 9 members of Slipknot. That's, I think, 3 less guitarists than Andrew WK has.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, I met them. Everybody was really nice. It was kind of a fun show.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who was all there? Slipknot Slayer.
Sepultura was there.
That sounds right.
Soulfly.
Okay.
Seven Dust. Lots of S bands.
I was going to say.
Mudvayne.
Oh my God.
Most of the bands on the Freddy vs. Jason soundtrack.
I was going to say, this sounds like a soundtrack from Freddy vs. Jason or a couple
Scream
horror
3.
Movies from the early 2000s.
Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Sweet.
I don't regret a thing.
Tattoo the Earth. I don't think they still do that.
They do not. It's gone. I think it was like 1 year and that was it.
Top 10 movies. We've moved from Slayer to Benji at number 10. The dog.
Are there any more disparate things?
maybe
Benji gets down with some Slayer.
The number one song here when we get to it is completely different.
Okay, cool.
Number 9, The Longest Yard, Old Bert. Number 8, The Life and Time of Life and Times of Grizzly Adams.
Whoa.
Airport, 1975 at number 7. The Godfather Part 2 at number 6. Earthquake at number 5.
Lots of disaster movies.
A lot of disaster. Well,
Emmerich and Devlin, man. They, yeah. They'd be very happy back in the
day. They would. Young Frankenstein at number 4. The Trial of Billy Jack at number 3. The Towering Inferno at number 2.
That's 3 out of the top 10 were disaster movies.
And then here's another double up, and this might be the best top 10 we've ever had, because there are 2 Mel Brooks movies on it. Number 1 was Blazing Saddles.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Sweet. That's awesome.
Yeah, right?
What a year when Blazing Saddles can just tear it up.
Top 10 songs. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm looking at this, and I know maybe half of them.
Okay.
Number 10, One Hell of a Woman by Mac Davis.
Okay.
Number 9, Benny and the Jets by Elton John.
That's a great one.
Number 8, The Streak by Ray Stevens. The Streak. The Streak was always on, like, those sports bloopers videos.
Yeah.
When some, like, yep. fan would... There were a lot of streaking going on in the 70s, too. As I mean, sporting events.
You know. It's a form of protest in a way, right?
In a way, or it's just...
Or it's just you want to be naked. You like the breeze on your bum?
Pretty much.
Yep.
Number 7, TSOP, The Sound of Philadelphia by MFSB. I don't know. I did not research that. TSOP by MFSB. I'm not even going to take a shot at that. Number 6, The Locomotion by Grand Funk Railroad. Did you just see Grand Funk Railroad?
I did see Grand Funk Railroad. Yeah.
Not at Tattoo the Earth.
No, no. They didn't play that. They missed that show.
Yeah.
I saw them on Sunday, this past Sunday.
Very nice.
Yeah, they were good.
Are they still good?
Yeah, they're really good.
Yeah, they're from around here. They're
I believe so, yeah. Yep. Yeah, they were really good. Very, very cool show.
Speaking of Detroit, Dance Machine by the Jackson 5.
Nice.
At number 5. Come and Get Your Love by Redbone at number 4.
Recently in the
Guardians
of the Galaxy.
Yes, part 1. Love's Theme by Love Unlimited Orchestra at number 3. I think I would know that if I heard it.
Probably. That sounds right, yeah.
Number 2 is Seasons in the Sun by Terry Jacks.
Okay.
And number 1, the opposite
of Slayer.
Slayer is The Way We Were by Barbra Streisand.
Yeah, that's about it. I thought you were going to say Barb. I thought
we've had a couple. Barb has had a couple number 1 hits, I believe, in the 70s.
Well,
at least top 10s.
Yeah, and she's had a lot of relation to horror movies we talked about in the past, because she was beat out by Sleepaway Camp. When her film Yentl.
Oh, that's right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for remembering that trivia.
That's important.
That is important.
It's important to know.
Yeah. All right, Willie. We're going to get into the movies, the real movies of 1974.
The ones we should be talking about.
Yes. We're going to get into the biggest movie of 1974.
Oh.
The best movie of 1974. Okay. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh, yes.
Directed by one Mr. Toby Hooper.
Yes. Recently deceased Toby Hooper. Very sad to hear that. Pretty excited to talk about his film, though.
Two siblings visit their grandfather's grave in Texas along with 3 of their friends and are attacked by a family of cannibalistic psychopaths. That's it.
That's about right.
That's what you need to know.
That's about it.
Willie, this is not the first time we've seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, no, it's not. No. No.
I don't even think it, like, because normally I'll go, like, it's been a while, but I think I've recently watched it too, but
I don't know. God, I'm trying to think of the, I don't know. It's been a little while for me, but nothing, you know, not the Sentinel a while.
Right.
yeah, no.
How'd it hit you this time?
It's interesting because it's a movie that kind of, it's weird because it stays the same every time you see it, but it kind of changes. Like, I think your perception of it changes a little bit each time. The movie's very much, it is what it is. It's a blast of just, it's like an assault on the senses.
Totally.
In every way, shape, and form. I mean, there's no other movie like The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I think there's movies that people would, like, lump in there with it. Maybe, like, A Last House on the Left, or perhaps even Hills Have Eyes. But there's no movie that quite captures the same feel that Texas Chainsaw does. And I think that's because Toby Hooper, both out of necessity and I think out of creatively, he shot a film that feels like what you're watching is real. And I should say the necessity portion of that is, quite frankly, they didn't have a ton of money making this film. And they shot it, you know, in the country at an old farmhouse mostly for very little money with a small crew and a small cast. I mean, that's it. It is what it is. So it's not going to look polished. Thank God it shouldn't. But that lends itself to the film creatively. And I'll point out one example specifically that I think has been talked about before. There is a moment in the movie, and it's probably my favorite moment in the movie. It's really shocking and just repulsive. And that's a great, adjective for this movie is repulsive. Yep. There's a moment when the boyfriend, I don't know his name, the character's name, but the first couple that goes to the house that wind up getting killed, the boyfriend, the Leatherface, is the reveal of Leatherface. He opens the door. He has this kind of amazing shot that's looking upward and panning upward at Leatherface, like he's some sort of like almost, you know, godlike figure or something. And he hits him on the head with the hammer, and there's something the actor does where he twitches around.
Yeah.
And if you've ever seen, and I don't suggest seeing these, but if you've ever seen videos of like a slaughterhouse or like a, when they use, that's the way they used to.
I had a college roommate that worked in a slaughterhouse. Sure. And that's how they did it.
They used to hit him in the head.
Yes.
Well, they would twitch around.
Not humans.
Stuff. No, no, no. I hope not. They would hit him in the head, you know, animals or right. pigs or whatever the case was. And that's realistically what a human would do. And, you know, and it, often in movies and more polished movies or more, you know, studio movies, somebody gets hit in the head with something and dies and they're dead. That's it. And Hooper knew what he was doing when he either asked that actor to twitch around or the actor decided to. I don't know what was the case. And then the abruptness of, you know, it's over in seconds. There's no fanfare. There's no, I don't think there's any score. There's almost no score in this movie.
It's quick too.
It just, he opens the door, he hits him, the guy drops, he's twitching, he gets yanked back and the door shuts. It's done within seconds. And it's, what's that?
I know. I'm just remembering it.
But that's the thing about it is it's so uncompromising and it's so uncinematic.
Yeah. This whole movie's almost uncinematic in a lot of ways.
It's like watching a snuff film. Like, I've never seen a snuff film and I never will, but this is what I could imagine it feels like to watch something like that is moments like that.
That introduction to Leatherface is an all-timer. It's the most abrupt, brutal thing.
You don't even have time to... I don't want to stick on this scene too much, but this is...
No,
I also don't want to... I mean, this is a movie that's been talked about. Let's just throw that right out there.
Right.
I don't know that you or I... I know that I can't offer anything overly fresh to it, but I will say, just by examining this scene, I think it tells a lot of the strengths of the film. But your brain doesn't even have time to register Leatherface as a character. You can't... I mean... You start questioning what you just saw because it happens so quickly that you're like, did I just see a guy with a face on his face? What is going on? What was that? Why, you know, like you can't, like it's, I don't know. It messes you up. And as the movie moves along and the plot, you know, and the danger escalate and we start to whittle down characters to the point where we get to our final character, spoiler alert of Sally, the insanity has reached such a peak that you're like, you almost have to laugh at what's happening because it's so uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so unnerving. And there's a point actually when the Sally character starts cackling maniacally and you're like, I get it. Like, well, everything was so disgusting and macabre and just, yeah. So it's delirious and it might be, one of the best portraits of madness ever in a film.
Yeah.
Through the Sally character and through the Sawyers, through the family. I'd put it right up there with Taxi Driver in terms of its ability to put you in the mindset of what it's like to go insane.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a fascinating film and I think in a way, you know, it comes around 74. This is a time where we just got out of Nixon and there's still a lot of unrest and a lot of bad feelings about what took place in Vietnam and the U.S. politics and the U.S. military. And in a way, and I don't know that this is what Hooper intended, but in a way, this film is kind of a, it's kind of a protest in its own right, in the sense that these guys just went out and said, we're going to make this damn movie, to hell with it. Mm-hmm. And we're going to make the grungiest, least palatable thing possible. Mm-hmm. And we're going to make people eat it up. And they do, like the Sawyer's chili. They eat it right up. So, yeah, it's an amazing film. It's not one I rewatched a ton or anything.
No.
Because it's not an easy watch. This is not a movie you just pop on.
Yeah.
You know, I guess I could double feature it with my other rainy day movies. But, yeah.
Which are Prisoners.
Prisoners, yeah. And like, what was my other one that was really depressing? Like Sleepers. Yeah, Tim's always fascinated by my rainy day movies.
This would be a good one. This would fit in for you.
Now I want to watch this on a, like a screened in back porch and like the hottest day of the summer.
Right. Oh my God. Yeah. So I will, because I agree with you, there's not much to add here that hasn't already been added. So I'll try to take a personal approach to it.
Yeah, for sure.
This is probably the first time I've watched it, yeah, in a couple of years, but like recent years. I will say this, the world was in a different place when I watched it. And I think the world has some similarities to where we were.
Sure.
1974. And the movie takes on a different feel and meaning, I think, during times of great distress and tumult.
And I think, I wonder if that feeds into what I was saying about, like, it seems like every time I watch this movie, it means something kind of different to me.
Or yes.
Or I walk away feeling a little different than, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that probably has something to do with it right there.
Because the thing with the movie is, not to get too darker, but it's a dark movie. Mm-hmm. So it's nice that a lot of people believe that everything happens for a reason, everything.
Yep.
And a lot of people believe that, and that's fine. I don't know.
It's an optimistic way of looking at it.
Optimistic way of looking at it. And when things are going good, you believe that, and things are going well.
Yep.
The thing is, if you are one to keep an open mind, you kind of have to believe that, okay, if I believe everything happens for a reason, I'm not 100% sure on that. That means maybe there's an opposite to that. Maybe, like, things just fucking happen.
Yeah, maybe the world is just chaos.
Just chaos and disorder.
Survive it.
And I'm not sure if any horror movie or movie that I've ever seen captures that feeling better, because
you're right.
Because shit just kind of happens in this movie. Even so, we're introduced to the characters, and the movie starts with a radio of all of the bad things basically going on in the country.
And is that John Larroquette at the opening sequence? He narrates.
Oh, does he?
The film.
Okay.
I believe. He's the narrator.
So he does the radio voice.
I believe so.
Okay. Yeah. That kind of goes over, like, the one that sticks out is like, there's a building on fire in Atlanta, and the grave robberies. There's grave robberies.
Yeah. I believe that's him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
So they're talking about all that. So you get all these awful things happening. And then you're introduced to the kids in the van. And one of the other things that's been touched on many times, one of the other things I like about this is they make the disabled gentleman the most annoying fucking character.
Yeah. I have problems with that character. I don't know.
It's really,
what's his name?
I don't
Franklin. Oh God.
He won't even go by Frank.
No.
So they're sitting there and they're talking about, I mean, they're kids in their late teens, early 20s, maybe.
Yeah, I want to say they're like just,
are they college kids?
If they were going to college, they would be. Yeah, yeah. I think that's the idea. Like first year college students or second year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
That sounds right.
Yeah, you're probably.
They sound like freshmen or sophomores, basically, when they're in there talking, because they're talking about stuff like astrology and trying to find meaning in the stars.
Yep.
And
they're realizing that life after high school is not terribly easy all the time.
Yes.
They start trying to think of ways to make it easier on themselves.
Right. So, and then the first person they're introduced to is that hitchhiker. What's his name? From the family.
Oh God! I just called him the hitchhiker. That's what I've always kind of.
Anyway,
I don't remember what his actual name is.
He gets in there and he just starts cutting himself.
Yeah, that's the amazing thing. There's another example of Hooper doing something unexpected and different, and almost it feels more realistic. Is here's a mentally unhinged human being. You kind of know right away there's something wrong with him. I mean, we've all been told don't pick up hitchhikers, and this is like the worst example of a hitchhiker. But I think the easy way to go would have been for him to attack one of them. in terms of like from a plot perspective, but they don't do that.
No, because it's more disturbing because here into this group of people that's trying to find order in the world and trying to find meaning in the world is throw this complete wild card who just starts cutting himself for no reason.
And then like giggling and just, it's more unnerving that way.
It throws you off from the jump. And so that's essentially what it is. And that's essentially the story of the movie. And I think she's a great final girl because her story is a story of survival, and it's a survival of the world that Hooper's created, which is just complete and utter chaos and disorder, in which in Hooper's world and the worldview of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is pretty much all you can do. And
yeah, no, and the amazing thing about that too is like, is surviving the best option?
Yeah, right.
Is she better off than the rest of them?
And the way she survives, I absolutely love, because it's just so random what happens. Like it shouldn't work because it seems like such a convenience that
the truck driver is driving
through, but even that, she just gets out and runs.
Yeah.
And runs, and then she just jumps into another truck.
Yep.
And she gets away, and because the movie is set up this world where just anything happens,
yep,
she gets away by pure dumb luck and coincidence.
Completely.
And it works.
At that point, she's blindly fleeing for her life. There's no attempt at like strategy.
Right. Another thing, since the last time I saw this movie, is I've been to Texas.
Ah,
I went to.
I've never been.
I have been.
Why'd you go there? I can't remember.
WrestleMania.
That's 32, right.
I went to Dallas.
That's
we
right.
We stayed in Dallas. Went to Arlington. Then we went to Austin. We drove to Austin and Waco, Fort Worth. So we were all around that area.
That's cool.
And what I'll say is this: I quite like Texas. It's a fascinating place.
Yeah,
like it's its own country basically.
Yeah,
and sure, people live their own way, and
it's a different way of thinking. It's different. Yeah,
and every town seems to be different. Like Austin is a very hip and young and liberal city.
Sure.
Well, you go to Fort Worth and it's just like, hey, don't take my guns.
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
But as we were driving, you drive through like the parts of like central Texas where it's nothing but field and cows and like
you drive through this movie basically, like they're the setting of the movie.
This movie captures that feeling of being like kind of like lost in Texas.
Yeah,
more than it's amazing.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Because that ran through my head the entire time. It's like, oh, this Texas Chainsaw.
You're like, oh, I could have been these kids in the van.
Yeah, okay. Leatherface lives there, and there's also, I don't know how many times I've realize this this moment, and I don't know why, but it popped in my head, and I probably have realized it before, but it popped in my head as I was watching this time. There's a great moment with Leatherface as he sits down and kind of takes stock of everything at one point. It's this really unsettling and like unnerving moment where he just kind of takes stock of everything, and it humanizes him in a way.
There are weird little hints of the
It's right
family.
After the guy finds a girl in the fridge.
Yes.
Yep.
Yep. There's weird little hints of like not only the Sawyer family's personalities, like individual ones like that, or like Leatherface's like dance that he does where he like gets angry and kind of like that famous bit at the end where he's like dancing around with the chainsaw.
Right.
You get little bits of that, but you also get there's kind of a mythology behind the Sawyer family in terms of like what's the hierarchy, like who's in charge kind of thing. It's interesting. They only hint at that stuff, and they try to explain it in other movies a little bit more so, but I kind of like that they just kind of let you kind of inform your own ideas of what you think the family's all about.
Yeah, this movie and Halloween have a lot in common. Thematically and plot wise too, I think, because Halloween's a lot like that well, and the later sequels would fill in gaps that maybe necessarily did not need to be filled in. I'm okay with them existing. This movie's still this movie. Halloween's still Halloween.
Yeah.
So but this was just really nice to revisit, and just especially at this time in the world and in my life, and just kind of go out like, holy shit, this movie is amazing.
Yeah.
So
it is a fascinating film.
It's always good to revisit classics like this and be reminded why they're classics.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There will never be another movie quite like this.
No.
They will try.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's wholly its own thing. Yeah.
I think that's all I got.
Yeah, I'm good.
All right, Willie, we're going to do something real quick.
What are we up to?
We're going to do a tournament.
Oh, cool.
We haven't done one of these since our like last 1970s episode.
Oh, yeah. Our Killer Animal Tournament.
Killer Animal Tournament.
Orca wound up winning that one.
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, okay. So the winner of this is to take on Orca then, right?
Yes. Oh, my God.
We're building a mega bracket is what we're really doing here. That's the true plan behind...
I don't even know how that would happen. So what we do, I got 8 movies that we've both seen. Oh my God.
You're good.
Texas-based horror movies that we've both seen. We're going to pit them. Let's do our own separate tournaments. So we'll start off with a match and we'll each pick one, maybe defend it in like a sentence or two.
Okay.
But these are Texas movies that aren't Texas Chainsaw Massacre or its sequels. So we're going to pick the second best Texas movie of all time.
Okay.
Basically.
Okay.
Or maybe how many Texas Chainsaw Massacres, like the 7th or 8th best if you really love all the TCMs.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to start this off with a matchup that might be a little tough. It's The Town That Dreaded Sundown, the original, versus The Town That Dreaded Sundown, the remake.
Oh, man.
Who you got here?
I'm going to go original. I just like the vintage-y vibe of it now, like looking back at it. The remake's actually pretty cool. It's not even really a remake. It's kind of a sequel.
It's sort of.
I don't want to say too much.
I thought the remake was really clever.
I thought it was too.
Yeah.
And I like both the films. I'm going to go the original, though, like I said, because it's got that kind of weird, like watching it now that it's, there's so many years between us. What year did that come out? Do you know?
I believe 70s. That was 73.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, watching it through the lens now, and it makes it creepier somehow, because it almost makes it feel like you're watching like
76.
Okay, cool. Yeah, it almost makes it feel like you're watching like a documentary on like the Manson family or something. Like it's creepy. Mm-hmm. It adds an extra level of creepiness. But I don't think you could go wrong saying the remake either. Really,
I think it's a good matchup. I'll go original too.
Okay,
I like the original quite a bit. I like both of them quite a bit, honestly.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, next up, another tough one. Planet Terror versus Death Proof. The Grindhouse films in a face-off.
Oh, see, I know where you're going to go with this one.
Yeah, you do.
And I'm going to go opposite. I'm going to go Planet Terror. And I understand that Planet Terror is pretty silly and schlocky, and there's not a whole lot going on there. I just laugh at it and have fun with it. It's kind of a romp. Plus, it's got a lot of actors I like. Michael Biehn pops up. Jeff Fahey's in it as like a barbecue cook, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. Saeed from Lost, isn't it? Which is pretty neat.
There are a lot of fun actors in it.
Yeah.
It's
a fun movie. And while it might not completely capture the feeling of a true Grindhouse movie, I know that's one of your complaints about it, and I totally get it, is that it's not, you know, it's a lot more slam bang than a lot of actual Grindhouse movies were, which tended to be kind of boring.
Right. Yeah. Like for maybe large... like the one it's facing off against.
Yeah. Yeah. But screw it. I had so much fun with it. I didn't even care. So yeah, I want to go Planet Terror.
Perfect. Yeah. You kind of hit it. I'm going Death Proof. I adore Death Proof.
Yeah.
I think it's a perfect, does a perfect job of capturing that Grindhouse feel, maybe to its own fault. Because it can be really talky and boring at times, but that I'm swearing a lot tonight. That fucking ending,
yeah, it's nuts.
Is so good, and Kurt Russell deserved more,
yeah,
than he got for that,
yeah,
because he's amazing in it.
No, he is. Yeah, I did not like Death Proof the first time I saw it, and subsequent viewing was a lot more.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Devil's Rejects versus House of a Thousand Corpses.
I gotta go Devil's Rejects.
Yeah, me too.
It's a better film.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a better film.
I'm in the same
boat. A better film.
This next one, our final matchup of the first round, is borderline impossible for me, so I'm gonna throw it to you first.
Oh man.
From Dusk Till Dawn versus Bubba Hotep.
I like both these movies a lot.
Me too.
God, this sucks. You know what? I'm gonna go Bubba Hotep. There's already a Rodriguez movie on my list, so I'm not giving him two.
It's fair enough.
There you go.
That's my argument.
That's as good an argument as I'm gonna.
You think I would have picked these by now since I've been looking at this tournament?
You made it.
I made the list.
Yeah,
and I flip flop back and forth on this. From Dusk Till Dawn. Oh God, I was gonna say that, but then I forgot JFK is at Bubba Hotep. From Dusk Till Dawn feels like the more Texas movie of the two, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's true.
I just want to make sure it takes place in Texas.
That's a factor. Yeah, no, it's Texas. Man.
Oh yeah, because the sequel is Texas Blood Money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It does feel very Texas. You're starting to sway me a little bit.
Now the issue. God, I don't know. Because they're at the Mexican border.
Yep. At the Titty Twister. I'm going to stick with Bubba Hotep.
I'm going to go with Bubba Hotep, too.
Screw it.
Because now that I look at this, I'm going Bubba Hotep.
All right.
Except for I can't I'm trying to remember where the bar is. Is it? It's on the border.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a border.
God, that's such a Texas move, though.
I'm going From Dusk Till Dawn. I'm switching. It's more Texas. You're right. I love Bubba Hotep, but you're right. From Dusk Till Dawn, this is a Texas tournament. It is way
more
Texas.
Yeah, it's From Dusk Till Dawn. Yeah. Okay. Second round. We've got to move on.
Yep, let's
go. From me trying to figure out where that bar is in From Dusk Till Dawn. So you have Original versus Planet Terror. Who you got?
Original Town of Dread Sundown.
You got that one?
Yes.
Over Planetara?
Yes.
So that's in your finals.
Because if I'm going with the logic that which one's the more Texas movie, then it's going to be Town of Dread Sundown.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to go, I've got Town of Dread Sundown Original versus Death Proof. I'm going to go Death Proof.
Okay.
Devil's Rejects versus From Dusk Till Dawn.
From Dusk Till Dawn.
I'm going to go Devil's Rejects.
Okay. See, I don't think of Texas when I think of, for whatever reason.
I know.
It just doesn't...
I think I just... You know, I was going to say it has Freebird, but Skinner's from, like, Florida. I know.
Yeah.
From Florida.
This movie seems like it'd take place in Florida to me.
That's, it feels like it takes place in Rob Zombie's version of Texas.
Yeah.
Which, who knows where that is. God, you're right. Oh, my God. Now we throw a wrench into things by throwing this Texas thing into the equation.
From Dusk Till Dawn is the clear winner of this tournament. In my opinion, if you're going
the only
Texas,
one that could have dethroned it, I just got rid of, which is Town of the Dread Sundown. I think
that's another one that's very Texas.
Yeah, we're gonna call it right now. Yep. I think
I'm going From Dusk Till Dawn.
From Dusk Till Dawn,
the whole thing. You swore
is the quintessential.
As soon as you brought up Texas again, I was like, "That's the winner." That really took a turn I didn't expect.
It's sweltery.
From Dusk Till Dawn. It's sweaty. It's gruff. But it's got a kind of interesting beauty about it as well, you know?
They're fleeing the Texas police in it.
Yeah, there's the laws out and about.
Like a Texas Ranger, like Walker, is after them.
Yeah.
Oh, can you imagine?
You've got Harvey Keitel as like a Southern preacher. Like, come on.
From Dusk Till Dawn is pretty awesome.
It's fucking sweet.
I'm okay with that pick. There you go.
It's sweet.
The second best Texas movie.
There's one thing I don't like about From Dusk Till Dawn.
What's that?
The spoiler alert from Dusk Till Dawn. You should watch it if you haven't seen it. Harvey Keitel's son, that Asian kid, the one, his son in the film. Do you recall this character?
Yeah.
His death is so mean. Like it's like weirdly mean for the rest of the movie. And I remember, like every time I watch it, I'm like, oh man, that's not nice.
You're
like,
that. Come on. Yeah. 96. I don't think we've done 96 yet. Maybe we need to do that one because Michael Parks is Texas Ranger Earl McGraw.
Yep.
Yeah.
So good.
I'm looking at this cast. Holy shoo. All right. We're moving on to It's Alive.
Yep.
Oh, It's Alive. The Davies expect a baby, which turns out to be a monster with a nasty habit of killing when it's scared. And it's easily scared.
Ooh.
Directed by Larry Cohen. Director behind such movies as Cue the Winged Serpent.
Yep.
He did the Return to Salem's Lot. He did all of the It's Alive. And he did one of our favorites, The Stuff.
The Stuff.
I like Larry Cohen quite a bit.
I do too. Yeah. Yeah. He's such an oddball, but I love him.
Oh, man. He did Original Gangstas too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Willie, It's Alive. Tell me about your thoughts and feelings on this movie.
It's Alive is like the opening like 20 minutes are really riveting. I think I am immediately sucked into the world that this expecting couple lives in, and it's got a very grounded approach to it, despite the fact that it's essentially about a monster baby.
Yes.
Which I think helps the movie at first. In its early, the early events, I think it helps because you're like, oh man, the stakes are high here. Like, people can get killed. Like, it's a big deal. And then the movie kind of gets into like a manhunt story where like the authorities are like after this baby who's mostly just hanging out in some bushes.
And then it gets, he does hang out a lot of bushes.
In a lot of bushes. And then I start to go, this is taking itself too seriously. I applaud it for that. It's ballsy. But like, it's funny to me.
The 70s are a weird double-edged sword of a time, because I think we ran into this when we did Willard and Orca as well.
Yeah.
Where it's dealing with things that are absolutely ridiculous, yeah, but it's doing so in a straight-faced manner. And part of me likes it because it's not constant. Like, this movie was made, if this movie was made today, the baby would wink at the screen at some point.
Oh, or, dude, like, 100%.
There'd be a ton of jokes about, yeah, it. And it probably would suck. And
probably.
Yeah, it would probably be pretty crappy. And it would be on Sci-Fi Network.
Yeah, they've remade this movie.
Yeah, I have not seen the remake.
Neither have I.
We had it at the video store.
Yeah. I opted out.
Me too. I've seen the sequels.
Yeah, I think I have too.
But, so it's this weird double-edged sword. Yeah, to go back to what you're saying, I kind of like that it takes it seriously. I kind of prefer that approach to it. But then sometimes when it takes it seriously, I get so bored.
Yeah. And
because I, like, part of me, maybe it's on me. Maybe this is my problem as well. Like, because part of me just wants to laugh at a killer baby.
Yeah,
like, maybe I don't know what I want.
I just want it to be a romp. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying it has to be like the Dead Alive killer baby the whole time, but like, give me a little of that, you know?
Right.
But I will say that the finale of the film actually winds up kind of snapping back into place for me and works out pretty well. I think the lead actor is interesting, and what's his name? Do you have IMDb pulled up real quick?
I will in a second.
Okay. He's interesting because he fits somewhere weirdly in between like everyman and like classic Hollywood actor.
Right.
And I don't know exactly which one he leans more towards.
Oh, John P. Ryan.
Yes, thank you. Who's in the sequel as well. But he's an interesting actor, and he feels like a real guy to me. And that's important because you need to follow him through his play. And you need to follow him through this emotional roller coaster of how do I deal with the fact that I've got this killer mutant baby that's mine, right? But then he wants to deny that too.
Yeah.
That to me was the draw here, was the struggle of the father trying to come to grips with, do I kill this thing? Do I try to like rehabilitate it, raise it as my own? Do I even acknowledge that this is mine? He tries telling every other character throughout the course of the film, and I think in a way he's trying to tell himself that, what is the line he always uses? Ain't of no relation to us, or something like that. Ain't,
yeah, he's fascinating too, because he's an asshole, kind of.
No, he is.
But he's not a despicable asshole. He's just kind of like, he's an asshole who you would know,
yep,
and like be friends with, yep, or be a coworker.
Sure.
But he is a dick, mm-hmm, and he's a dick to his child.
Yeah.
His child is murdering people though.
Yeah. So it's like, what do you, yeah.
But even in the beginning, like, he's just kind of a kind of a smarmy, a little bit controlling husband.
Yeah.
With his wife.
No, he is. He is.
So he's not like a worthless human being, but he's a jerk.
No, he can be a bit of a jerk. And the wife can be kind of a jerk too.
They both can be.
Yeah. They're both a little selfish. And I mean, they leave their son with like a random family friend for like weeks because they don't want him to have to be around when, I don't know. It's interesting.
That's right.
Yeah. It's interesting, but
very selfish, very self-involved people.
Kind of.
Seem like upper middle class,
yep,
types. Yeah.
Excuse me.
Yeah, well, you're thinking about the middle of this movie right now.
I know. That's what I was thinking about, that middle portion. No, I I think he's like an ad executive or something like that. I couldn't.
Yeah, they give him three weeks off, don't they? Or three months off?
Like that.
Yeah,
that's
nice awesome. Vacation.
But maybe I don't feel so bad for this guy anymore. No, but the ending is actually kind of weirdly touching in a strange, bizarre way for a film about a mutant baby being pursued by the police. Because once he finally gets to like see it up close, you know, like all of the, you know, like everything stripped away, and he's like, this is my son, you know, like he's like it or not, this is my kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to do my best by this mutant baby, you know. And I like to think that there's probably some stuff going on here. This is probably,
no, it's a metaphor.
It's they even mention, they at one point they unfortunately refer to the mentally challenged as retarded, which isn't, you know, it's a product of the time, but they do that.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to wonder, and I would assume that some of what this movie is trying to say is about parents specifically, and oftentimes I think fathers kind of rejecting or neglecting their kids based on various things.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's something, maybe they're an illness, or something like even like a deformity or a disorder. Like I was born with a disorder, you know, you wouldn't know it, you know, looking at me, but you know, that could have an effect on plenty of parents.
Willie was a murderous baby.
Yeah, I was the baby in this film, actually.
This is based on Willie.
Yeah, this is based on my life. Luckily, I grew up to be a very well-adjusted
young man. Right, you were stuck by him. Mm-hmm. Those people, I mean, they had it coming.
Absolutely, yep. But no, I was born with a disorder, so...
Right.
I was told pretty early on, you know, you're not going to be able to play sports, you know... You bleed too easily, you wouldn't be able to do that. Okay, fine. I could see how, luckily my dad was very cool and you know, found other common interests with me that we were able to share. But I was lucky in that, because there are plenty of other parents, I think, in that situation, fathers specifically, who I think would be very disappointed by, and I'm not saying my dad wasn't, but very disappointed by the fact that I was not able to play football or to do a lot of those things that you kind of expect of a son, right? Whether it's fair or not, I think that's expected oftentimes. So this movie can kind of cover anything. And I mean, obviously it's an extreme ridiculous version of that, but in a way, when you see how society reacts to the father in this film, how his job basically disses him and boots him out.
There's
his neighbors start to boot him, like to kick him out of their lives.
There's a great little comment at like media sensationalism too, when they just throw his name out while he's driving the car. He hears it on the radio. He's like, well, they threw my name out. Thanks.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It destroys some relationships. And I can imagine, now I think it's a little different, certainly with children that are born with various things, but I think people handle it better now, but I think, it's taken time to get to that point. And I think there are people probably still that would kind of start cut ties with friends of theirs that might have a child that is not what they anticipated or what they expect as the norm. So I don't know. There's some interesting stuff going on here. I mean, it can be a dull film, but there's some stuff going on.
Oh, I think so too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's dull for you and I, some people might find it fascinating in the middle.
Sure.
So I'll just say that too. Other than going on in 1974, big craze sweeping the nation, serial killers.
Oh, sure.
You want to know what happened in 1974?
Let's hear it.
Some of the big ones were coming out to play.
Big ones. All the hits.
I mean, Ted Bundy got off to his first murder in 1974 in January. Okay. The BTK, Dennis Rader.
Sure.
First murdered in January 1974.
Wow.
John Wayne Gacy killed the second of his 34 victims in 1974.
Okay.
Carl Eugene Watts murdered the first of his 90 victims in 1974.
Oh my God.
Paul John Knowles went on a killing spree, murdering 18 people in 1974.
Maybe they all saw the middle portion of It's Alive. I'm just kidding.
No, but so serial killer, the 70s and 80s are kind of the golden age of serial killers. It's like the hot time.
That's insane. The number of
The 60s, there were not a lot of serial killers. I have the stats somewhere. Let me find it real quick. And it's actually serial killers have gone on decline in the 2000s. Mass shootings have gone up.
I was going to say, yeah. That's great. We're making up for it in other horrible ways.
19 serial killers, or 19 serial killing cases, I believe, in the 1960s. In the 70s, that jumped up to 119, and then 200 in the 80s.
Okay.
So, and then it dropped back down in the 90s and 2000s. But as you said, we seem to have replaced that in some ways.
Yeah, unfortunately.
So here's the thing with these serial killers. You're in the middle of this time, 1974, of great unrest in a lot of ways. You have serial killers running around. I believe the Zodiac Killer was doing a thing around this time.
Yes.
Too. But these serial killers, they have parents as well. Like, everybody kind of forgets that, like, they have, like, people raised these
kids. Were babies.
Yeah,
they were kids.
And not every case is like, I don't believe every case, I have not researched every case, but not every case is like they're shitty parents, like you just blame the parents. Some of them are, I mean, they're probably not good.
Yeah, no, I know, but
there's this weird, there's almost this, there's kind of like this nature versus nurture thing going on here too with the serial killer baby. But it's totally on the side of nature because they never get a chance to nurture it.
Give it a shot.
No, they never really get the chance. But like Ted Bundy's mom, like, defended him until his dying day.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think if I recall, Ted Bundy's parents weren't like the best parents, but like they, I don't know. She was not convinced he was doing all these killings. But then on his the day of his execution, she told him, like, you'll always be my precious son. So this is a movie basically. In a lot of ways, it's a movie about the parents of a serial killer.
Yeah.
And how you deal with that. And if, and in a weird way, like, they come to accept the fact that their baby is a murderous monster.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have any choice but to show him love at the end.
That's their baby.
That's their baby. That's their child. Yeah. So, it's a very empathetic movie. That's in a lot interesting. Of ways. Yeah. So I think there is quite a bit going on. You could probably read into some abortion stuff too if you wanted.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
I'm not going to do that.
Nah. I already got into some dark, some deep.
Yeah,
dark
we've
stuff,
got dark
so.
Enough there. Yeah. So that's it on It's Alive for me.
Yeah.
Let's leave it.
It's
there.
An interesting movie.
It's an interesting movie, and I like it overall. It's just, it can be a bit slow at times. It's got that. It's got that 70s pacing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, every podcast, every horror podcast, they're getting ready for Halloween.
Oh, sure.
People love it.
Sure.
We love Halloween.
I'm a fan. Yeah.
But we don't, we're not every horror podcast.
No, we're our own.
We're our own thing. We're getting
beast.
Ready. We're getting ready for Christmas.
Yeah, that's us. That's a, we skip right over
Christmas in September.
Yeah, we skip right over Halloween and Thanksgiving and just go right to.
So if the baby from It's Alive was not a serial murderer, or maybe if they could calm him down,
yeah,
he would be getting some Christmas presents this
year. I assume
he's not gonna get any this year because he's been naughty.
No,
he's off Santa's list.
He's bad.
And do you want to know what he would be getting this year?
What would he be getting?
Let's check out some toys of 1974.
Oh, cool.
Awesome. I like this. We were neither one of us were born in 1974.
No.
So we'll remember some of these.
Maybe, yeah. But some of the stuff that stuck around.
But even these would be like, man, these are kind of old toys. Mom, why don't you hook it up with the new hotness?
Yeah, I don't want this stuff.
No, I actually like some of these stuff.
Give me some Thundercats.
Tonka toys.
Okay.
We all know what Tonka toys are. They're big construction
vehicles.
Toys. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Matchbox Garage. This was a super station that allows you to pull apart your station and rearrange it to include your own design. This is like, you could just put, it's like a garage. It's like a parking garage for your Matchbox cars. Practical toys.
All right. Cool.
Train
set. So your parents don't step on them in the middle.
Right. Magic 8 Ball.
Sure.
This is stuck around. Did you have a Magic 8 Ball?
No, I had friends, I think, that had them. Yeah. Yeah. I've used them before.
Yeah, I had one. It broke. It would always answer the same way. It was
how is there not a horror movie about Magic 8 Ball?
Was there not?
I don't think so. You can tweet at us if we're wrong. I don't want to watch it if it exists.
Yeah, let us know.
Am I missing one? I don't know. Anyway.
No, I mean, it's not Ouija.
It's no Ouija, but
it's no Ouija. A microscope. This is from thepeopleshistory.com, by the way.
Okay, microscope. I think I had one of those at some point.
A microscope? Yeah, I did too.
Yeah, I think I had a telescope too.
I didn't do anything. I just looked at like telescope. I never had a telescope. That would have been baller.
I had a little handheld one.
Oh, that was sweet.
It was neat.
I had a microscope. You look at a little
slides and stuff.
And stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would put like dead skin in there.
I was going to say, but I was a boy, so I put like fingernail clippings and like, I put like an ant on it, you know. I probably looked like a serial killer when I was a kid, now that I'm thinking of it. Putting fingernail clippings on a
right.
microscope. Yeah, that's alarming.
So you got the microscope for the future scientists, for the future capitalist entrepreneurs. You have sure. a play school, McDonald's.
Ah.
Apparently, it's just a McDonald's. It's just a toy McDonald's.
It's like the store?
You could use your Matchbox cars.
They could drive up and order.
Do the drive
yeah, yeah, yeah.
What
sure.
What a boring... Or boring life. People need
weird.
Video games.
Weird option.
The Inchworm, Hasbro Inchworm. Fisher-Price Play Plane. That's just a plane.
Okay.
Twister.
Yeah.
Always fun party game.
I played Twister.
Doctors and Nurses Kit. Uh-oh, kids.
That's alarming, too.
Yeah. BB Rifle Gun.
Yeah.
That'll help out down the road for some of these kids.
Shoot your eye out.
Yeah. Mrs. Beasley Talking Doll. This is a, she says 10 different things when you pull her ring, cuddly cloth body, vinyl face, hands, and rooted hair you can comb. She's creepy. She's right there.
Oh, I don't like her.
I do not like her either. She seems like a teacher that's wearing some sort of onesie.
She's shifty, man.
Toboggan, student calculator. A giant spider bike, a boy spider bike, a girl okay. spider bike,
oh.
colonial dollhouse, a Winnie the Pooh pop-up box.
Okay.
So, once again, not an exciting time. These kids needed video games.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I liked my toys better.
My toys were better. Yeah.
I had all the good stuff that was there. And then
suck at 70s kids.
Yeah. Garbage. No wonder there were so many serial killers running around.
And that's why these kids had a black Christmas.
Oh, no. He did it.
During,
what a segue, Tim.
During their Christmas break, a group of sorority girls are stalked by a stranger. Willie, I'll get us started on this. I watched this movie, and every time I watch it, I have a ton of fun with it. Like, I enjoy myself all the time. And then I completely forget.
What happens in the
most
movie?
Of the movie. But here's what I'll say. I like it a lot. I think it's really fun. I think it's funny. I think, Lois Lane is great. I can't remember her name right now.
Margot Kidder.
I will, Margot Kidder in Black Christmas is like one of my screen crushes.
No, she's adorable.
Oh, she's amazing. Yeah, she's so cool.
She's feisty.
Yeah, I like her a lot. Me too. I like Margot Kidder quite a bit, but then she had her issues.
Well, you know, we won't get
into that. She's feisty in Superman as well.
She has a lot in common, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, with the baby from It's Alive.
What?
They both hung out in bushes. A lot. I was really proud of myself for
that. Really, yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah. You know that, right?
What's that?
That she hung out in people's bushes?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, okay.
That's like our thing, yeah.
I'm just making sure.
No. Okay.
All right. I got worried for a second that maybe my co-host did not know, and then I'm like, I should probably explain this. Like, what if?
Yeah, because...
like, you'd forever be plagued by, like, what the hell did he mean by that?
She was one of... Or I would have just Googled it. She did that, but didn't Robert Downey do that as well?
Yeah.
Or did they both do that?
Probably together.
They both had their issues as well.
They did.
Yeah. I think
they're both doing better now.
I think they are both doing better now.
Good for them. But so yes, she is adorable.
We can make jokes about it.
Yes. She's adorable in this film. Big fan.
Yeah, she's really good.
Yep.
Willie, what do you think of Black Christmas? That's all my thoughts, honestly. Maybe some later.
Black Christmas is an interesting movie, too.
I should say it's directed by Bob Clark.
Bob Clark, yep. Yep.
Who did Porky's and A Christmas Story.
Porky's. You shoot your eye out.
Right?
I called it right there, yeah.
Oh, and excuse me, I'm sorry. Maybe the scariest movie on this list, Baby Geniuses.
Yep, that's pretty terrifying. Oh, he did Baby Geniuses?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
A movie about babies that are geniuses.
Oh, my God. It's all coming together now, isn't it? Super intelligent babies. Bob Clark Christmas films. I feel like everything's just winding up real nice. Yeah, Black Christmas. It's one of those ones that I didn't see until later. And I remember it was after I had heard, like, no, Halloween is not the true first slasher film. Black Christmas is the true first slasher film, which is funny because then like it's like, well, no, Psycho, and then, well, no, Peeping Tom, and then, you know, like there's always an earlier
you
one
keep
that
going back.
Yeah. You just go back. Yeah. People have been stabbing each other for a long time since before they could shoot each other.
Yeah, you probably, if you wanted to just be an, like an ass about it, you could go back to like Fritz Lang's M.
Go back.
Like, that's like the slasher movie.
Go back to like Hamlet. There's a lot of people getting stabbed in that and poisoned.
Right.
Anyway. Spoilers for Hamlet. So I had heard that, and I think the reason why, and I enjoy this movie, I really do, but I think the reason why I've never held it in super high regard by any means is that I've always been a little like angry about that. Like, I almost felt like
you held that against the movie.
Which is weird because I'm not normally like that, and I certainly don't hold a grudge anymore, but I think that kind of colored my take on Black Christmas, because people would bring up the, you know, like horror fans, kind of the more hardcore on the internet, the ones that would, when sites like Bloody Disgusting first started up, or like even like Ain't It Cool, you know, like those are the kind of guys, those internet movie buffs that would sit there and tell you like, no, Halloween is not the originator, it is Black Christmas, you know. They'd be like really like I know better than you.
They would do it in that movie bad voice.
Yes.
Too. I don't just know. How none of them sound.
None of them sound like
they all sound nasally like me.
It's not the best. but they throw that out there, and I loved Halloween, and I love Halloween with such a burning passion that I like would be like, F you.
Mm-hmm.
No. But I did see Black Christmas eventually, and I did enjoy it, and I still do enjoy it. The thing that works best for me in Black Christmas is the fun, carefree attitude of the ladies.
Yes.
They just seem like people I want to hang out with.
They're cool girls.
They're cool girls. They're independent girls for
the
most part.
They're too good for every man in this movie.
Pretty much. Yeah, yeah, they're all schlubs. They suck. Mm-hmm. The only one who's getting anything done is Billy. If you want to, I'm just going to call him Billy because that's what he says a lot, is when he talks about Billy.
John Saxon's probably getting the things.
Oh, okay. You know what?
He usually is.
I forgot John Saxon was in this. John Saxon is a presence. Love that man. He should be in everything I watch. The world needs more John Saxon.
A new nightmare's John Saxon.
Yeah, there he is. He's so silly in that movie. But yeah, John Saxon's pretty great. Anyway, so yeah, no, I mean, this is a very much early slasher, like early slasher. I mean, the kills aren't terribly inventive. They're creepy. There's something creepy about the body that's upstairs in the rocking chair. That kind of classic shot that I think was used on multiple posters of the girl with the bag on her head. That's like, you can tell she's been breathing it in. There's something about that that's very spooky and very unnerving. But the kills aren't terribly inventive or bloody or gory or anything like that. That wouldn't come till later. And that's fine.
I quite like the kill of the house mother.
Yeah, that is good. Yeah, with the meat hook thing. Yeah, that's good.
I had to ask Amy, my girlfriend, because you always see house mothers in this. You never see house mothers anymore. That's a nice little product of the time.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
If they're always just, they're older women.
Yeah.
Usually alcoholics.
This one is too.
This one definitely is. Yeah. That are watching the young ladies.
Was Mario Kidder supposed to be like a sorority girl then?
I believe so.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Because I always, like, at first, when I first started watching it again this time, I'm like, wait, is she another house mother then? Because she's like, she seems like she's a little more like,
no, she's charged. She's a sorority.
She's just like she's the alpha.
Yeah. She's, yeah. She seems to have been around for a little bit.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. She's probably been in college longer than she needed to be.
She's like the Van Wilder.
Yes, thank you. That's what I was thinking of. What works here, for me, the best is the killer and how creepy he is. Especially considering you never see him. His phone calls are like legitimately unnerving because he's changing voices and stuff. And
the phone calls are really creepy in this.
Yeah. They work. And if you've ever heard,
because they're really mean and gross too,
they're kind of like weirdly lurid, but you don't really know what he's talking about, and then they get kind of aggressive.
Weirdly enough, they might be the same like prank phone calls the kids in Porky's might make.
Yeah, it's not too far off, right? And actually, if you listen to there's a really interesting televised interview with the Zodiac Killer. He called into a talk show. They never proved that it was actually him, but somebody called into this talk show and was at least pretending to be the Zodiac Killer and was speaking in like multiple voices and stuff. And it's weirdly similar to this and just as creepy.
Really?
So, yeah. Yeah. There's something very horrifying about that. And the fact that you never see the killer in this movie, makes him kind of creepier. He's shrouded in a mystery, even more so than like a Michael Myers, who is, you know, yes, you don't see his face really. But he at least has a, you know, he's got the mask on, you know, so you can recognize the danger. This one, you see an eye once or twice and that's about it.
Right.
Yep. So it works. The killer works for me in this. And the girls work for me in this. And between the two things there, it definitely buoys me through the movie. And I, well, it's not my favorite. That's okay.
Yeah.
I still enjoy it.
I do too.
You know, it won't be the last time I watch it.
No, I think this is a good, this might be a good bi-yearly watch.
Sure. Every couple of years. I could see myself watching some Black Christmas. So, yeah, no, I think it's worth checking out. And I do think it has a very important place in horror history and specifically the slasher subgenre. And for that reason, you know, you should see it.
It's also funny and well made. So it's an easy watch, too.
Absolutely.
Which is not always true.
It's an easier watch than arguably the other two we talked about.
Terror Train?
No, than the other two tonight that we talked about.
Oh, yeah.
It's arguably an easier watch, certainly than It's Alive, and I think it's an easier watch than...
Texas Chainsaw Massacre is breezy fun.
Okay. Well, all right, Tim.
No, I was thinking more 80s, 70s, and 80s
slashers. No, I gotcha. This is certainly an easier watch than Terror Train.
Yes.
Even if it doesn't have David Copperfield...
doing magic in it?
We're still doing okay.
Yeah. This moves a lot quicker than that. It's better than the Tom Hanks one.
The Tom Hanks one, yeah. That actually, this one and the Tom Hanks one remind me the most of each other, weirdly enough.
Yeah, they both have a similar tone.
Yeah.
I think. Uh-huh. Yeah. I don't have a ton to say about this. I don't understand why, and I've never understood why nobody goes and checks in the attic. Seems like a bit of a miss on their part.
Even after the murders are over and we think the killer... Well, no, we know the killer isn't killed. But, like, the cops think they have caught the killer. They still haven't found that poor girl upstairs. Or, like, five of the other bodies up there.
Yeah.
Like, eventually they're going to smell, right? Just saying.
He's not quiet up there either.
No, he's stomping around.
He's banging around. He kills the house mother in like the loudest way he possibly
can.
He's
throwing things around and getting angry and like.
So I mean,
like he's not very good at this.
If you can't get past that plot hole, the fact that nobody goes to check the attic.
Yeah, you gotta let that go.
Yes. 70s. What was I gonna say about the 70s? It's a very cynical time.
Mm-hmm.
And what is like the least cynical thing you can imagine in American culture?
Christmas.
Yeah, nothing cynical about Christmas. can't think of a thing. So this, of course, the 70s would make a horror movie about how shitty it is during Christmas sometimes.
Yeah.
So it's a nice little 70s thing to do. A Christmas horror. It was not invented by Black Christmas. No. You can go back to A Christmas Carol if you want.
Even the carolers get somebody killed in this movie.
Yep.
Yeah.
So not invented, but it is kind of a darker, cynical, more sadistic look at Christmas.
No, it is.
And I think that is why Christmas movies are so popular, because here's the thing. I love Christmas. I think it's a great time of year. Get to see your family, hang out. You can see family, friends. Wonderful.
It's always nice.
Yep. Buy gifts for people. See the look of joy on their faces.
It's also a little terrifying, though, isn't it, Tim?
It's creepy.
Well, there's a creepy factor to it, but it's also terrifying from a practical standpoint, mm-hmm. because going into the Christmas season, you really hear people be like, oh my God, I can't wait for Christmas as adults. They're like, oh God, Christmas is coming.
Right.
Because it's like, financially, I'm going to be dying mm-hmm. by the end of this season. And let's be honest, you spend a lot more time around Christmas with family than most people care to.
And odds are
I enjoy it, but I know a lot of people who are like, oh my God, it's too much.
Yeah, I like my family.
I actually don't have a complaint, but I can understand why some people don't. I mean,
there's always going to be like one person like it gets you a gift and you're like, I didn't get him a gift.
And it's so uncomfortable.
you have to last second run and get the gift. Like, oh, I forgot your gift.
Oh, I left it at home. Whoops.
Or just a wrap of a DVD that you think they might like.
Yeah, do something. Maybe we'll just figure something out.
So anyway, yeah.
But yeah, so it's not always a pleasant, enjoyable time for everybody. In fact, many people get very depressed around the holidays.
Some people don't even celebrate Christmas.
Absolutely.
If you can believe it.
This is blasphemy. Yeah. Believe it or not, some people don't give a damn about Christmas.
Yeah. I think someday you and I are going to do a horror Christmas special just for fun.
I think we should.
So we'll get deeper into it then. But it always reminds me of the story in Gremlins where the girl talks about losing.
Oh, God, it's horrible. But
it's such a perfect.
It's kind of incredible.
It's such a perfect scene. And it's my favorite Christmas horror movie moment.
It's amazing.
I also love Krampus, though, too.
Yeah, Krampus is fun.
Yeah, I like a lot of Christmas horror.
Uh-huh.
Willie, anything else to say about Black Christmas?
That's it. That's all I got, man.
Me too. All right. That's it for 1974. Interesting year, fun year.
What a year. I mean, seriously. Amazing stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Next episode, we plan on doing demonic toys. Willie, I've gotten a head start on these.
I know. You're ahead.
There are four of them.
Doing another Fight the Franchise.
We're doing a Fight the Franchise Demonic
Toys. The Demonic Toys series. So Demonic Toys 1 and then 2. Oh,
I believe you can find all of them if you want to watch along on Amazon Prime.
Yeah. At your own risk.
At your own risk. 2 is... I'm not even sure if Dollman versus Demonic Toys qualifies as a movie. It's like 60 minutes long.
Awesome.
And it's all footage from... the other two movies.
Awesome. Yeah, so Doll Man versus Demonic Toys is the other one, and then Puppet Master versus Demonic Toys.
And then Demonic Toys 2.
Yeah, so there's four total.
Four total, and it goes those two, Puppet Master, Doll Man, and then Demonic Toys 2.
Yeah. They wait until later to...
It's got this and, like, the Rambo series have the best titles.
So good.
So after, Nikki will be back.
Yep.
Our franchise expert.
She will return.
This is
her pick.
This is her pick.
She better return.
Yeah. She better watch these.
She better watch all of them.
I'm just going to say this. These are right in Nikki's wheelhouse. She will adore these.
Mm-hmm. As the resident Leprechaun in Space fan, she'll be very happy.
Willie, do you want to pick the next year while we're at it, too?
Yeah, I got it picked up.
These are fun.
I was going to do a 90s year.
Cool.
And then you mentioned 96, so that's what we're going to do.
Awesome.
So, we're probably going to do From Dusk Till Dawn. Here's some other ones. Scream, The Frighteners, The Craft, Thinner, Bad Moon, Hellraiser Bloodline, The Dentist,
no.
Bordello of Blood, Trilogy of Terror 2, Ebola Syndrome, The Ghost in the Darkness, Stendhal Syndrome, Amityville Dollhouse, Tremors 2, Children of the Corn 4, Pinocchio's Revenge, Island of Dr. Moreau, Mary Riley, Carnosaur 3, Primal Species,
of course,
Head of the Family,
Ooh.
Lawnmower Man 2, Witchcraft 8,
Uncle Sam and Fear. Did you name those?
Not yet.
Okay.
Fear, Diabolique, oh my God.
All right, well.
This is something else.
I think we should do... I think we should do...
Satanic Yuppies? What is that?
I think we should do From Dusk Till Dawn.
No, 100%. No, we're doing that. We're doing Scream, too.
I would like to do The Craft.
Okay, then we're doing Scream, From Dusk Till Dawn, and The Craft.
Let me just make sure on these real quick.
Yep, let's check them and make sure that they're actually the year. Yep. Good call, Tim, because I haven't learned my lesson on that.
Scream is 96.
Cool. That's good news.
The one I was worried about was The Craft, because I thought I remember that coming out. Craft says 1996 everywhere.
Cool.
Good, because I really, really like The Craft.
So there's our three movies.
Cool. This is going to be fun here.
It's going to be a lot of fun. I haven't watched The Craft in a long time.
Yep.
I am always down to watch Scream, and I'm always down to watch From Dusk Till Dawn.
We're back with Wes, our first Robert Rodriguez, and our first Tarantino probably will be our only of those two. Which one are you thinking?
I would argue that Hateful Eight is a horror film. We will not be talking about Hateful Eight, but I would argue that is a horror film.
Fair enough.
It's pretty close.
Rodriguez, though, this is pretty much it, right?
This is probably it for Rodriguez.
Well, I mean, once we did Grindhouse, we're not going to do Grindhouse.
Probably not, but...
the Machete movies are action.
Yeah, I guess. Anyway, so yeah, this is, so Rodriguez, that's pretty cool. Almost thought about doing Frighteners as well, but...
Yeah, Frighteners is a lot of fun. If we do a Peter... If we do a Peter Jackson horror movie, though, I want it to be Dead Alive.
Sure, I agree.
Not that we could just do The Frighteners. Well, like I said, we're going to have to loop back around to these movies at some point, these years at some point. So, and I'm guessing we're probably going to loop back around to a lot of 80s and 90s years.
Sure,
so,
I would agree.
I can see us doing The Frighteners. I like The Frighteners quite a bit. It's just, it's really long, too.
Yeah.
Like, I remember it being like way too long.
Yeah, it is a longer
one. Isn't it over 2 hours?
Isn't that just Peter Jackson?
That's the thing, is even when he's making a movie like The Frighteners, he's making it too long.
Yeah, he has a hard time.
Bless his heart.
He doesn't know how to kill his darlings.
No.
Anyway, so yeah, 96, and that'll be following our next episode, which is the Demonic Toys Fight the Franchise.
Yes.
Cool.
Awesome. All right, guys. Watch Demonic Toys, watch Scream, watch The Craft, watch From Dusk Till Dawn. Willie,
so much homework.
Where can they write us to tell us what they think of all these movies?
HorrorMovieYearbook@gmail.com, Facebook.com/HorrorMovieYearbook, and we're on Twitter @HMYearbook. So write to us there.
That's it. Go check out Gone to Texas. Go check out Game Nerds. Go check out Film Nerds.
Check it all out.
Listen, we're cranking out content right now.
Yeah, we aren't playing around.
Yeah.
We don't kid around.
We're back to school. We're back to schooling you on good movies.
All right. It's been good.
That's how we're going to edit. Well, I wish we could edit on your Marco Kidder joke, but...
Yeah, that was my favorite.
All right. Bye-bye, man and woman.